Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your host, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Money is the Root of All Evil, right after this message. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce, and the government gets about 60%. Now, that's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? But if you think your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net about $4,000 more dollars, or about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year, guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. You produce 100% more and you get 8% of it. Now, that's a deal, isn't it? Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves in the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request, and we'll send you that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this scripture, 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. It says, "The love of money is the root of all evil." It's not exactly quoted correctly from the original. The original has it, "The love of money is a root of evil," not the root of all evil, but it's pretty close and you get the drift. Now, we spend an inordinate amount of time looking at sex and money. Human beings are motivated by 5 motivators. Vanity, number 1. Jealousy, number 2. Lust, number 3. Greed, number 4. And fear, number 5. The 5 motivators of human nature. Vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And there's somebody out there appealing to one or more of your 5 motivators every time you see an advertisement, every time somebody makes an offer to you, or it's a sale, or we want you to buy this or that or something else, or borrow money, or take this credit card. We're appealing to your 5 motivators. And, of course, it's up to you to decide for yourself whether or not you want to take that tender offer. It's what a tender offer is. It's, "I'm going to tender you an offer. So I make available to you the big screen TV, the credit card, or something else, the mortgage on this beautiful new home in Bellwood Estates." Now, about the biggest single investment that most of us have is our homes. Could be your home, your farm, the ranch, or whatever it is that you call your abode or your dwelling. For most of us, it'll be a little simple house, just a house sitting on a lot somewhere where you come in at night and put up your feet, watch the TV, get up in the morning, brush your teeth, eat your breakfast, and go off to work. It's a place where you sleep. For some of us, it's a little more than that. It's our livelihoods. I happen to live on a farm, and so here on the farm, I've got cattle and land and fences and all kinds of work to do here on the farm. This is my livelihood. But it's the most significant investment that I have. Well, you know, some people have stocks and bonds, and some people may have gold and silver, or they may have some other investments, but primarily, for most of us, your house, your land, your farm, your ranch is probably around 90% of everything that you've got. And more than likely, if you're an average American, you don't own that free and clear. It's mortgaged. And these mortgages on our homes is our Achilles heel when it comes to a foreclosure or our net worth or what are we going to get out of this when the economy finally collapses. Now, the Federal Reserve is working hard to make this a soft landing, and we've had a number of soft landings from 1913 on. Now, the 1929 to 37 depression wasn't exactly a soft landing. That was one of these major collapses of the economy. Now, learning from the 29 experience, the Federal Reserve and the government, that is the bureaucracy, the Republicans and the Democrats have been working hard, and we haven't had a major depression, but we've had a few recessions, higher unemployment and higher inflation. And over the last 70 years, we've watched the value of the dollar from 1933 to 2003 lose 96.5 cents, 96.5% of the value of the dollar. So from a perspective of how much is the dollar worth, it's already collapsed. But we're using dollars today to buy, sell, and trade with. You have a house, and it's got a value. Now, back in 1927, a nice big house was about $7,000. That same house today is probably around $300,000. Of course, that depends on where you live, but you know, if you're up in Boston and New York, you're probably talking $300,000-$500,000 for houses. The median price of a house now is at around $160,000. Last I saw, $161,000. That's half the houses in America are more than that, and half the houses in America are less than that. And then you've got the average price of houses out in San Diego, which is sky high, and the average price of houses in Fargo, North Dakota, which is a little less. And you look at that investment, and you look at your house and the value of your house and what you paid for it, less your payments and so on, and you say, well, this house is a pretty profitable adventure, pretty profitable business. You cannot lose money in real estate. Real estate is where everybody invests and makes a profit every time, and there's never any exceptions. And the housing market never has a bubble and never has a decline. That's pretty much what most of us believe. But the Money Changer ran an article in the October 2004 issue, and the headline is "The Coming Crash in the Housing Market." Now remember, we're talking about money, the root of all evil. And we spend an inordinate amount of time trying to make money. And I pointed out to you that there are 23 laws that Moses gave us at Mount Sinai. Moses got those 23 principles of economic law from God up on top of the mountain, came back and he wrote them down. Now, we talked about blessings. That's the basic contract, the old covenant. We talked about bondsmen. Those are called employees today. We talked about inheritance, an inheritance tax, the death tax, just weights and balances, Federal Reserve notes versus gold and silver. Last time we talked about strict liability and insurance. And we talked about tithes. You know, John D. Rockefeller tithed and made $1 billion. These are basic principles in law. Now, that's not all 23 of them. We'll talk more about the rest of them as we progress along. But I want to talk about housing and the coming crash in the housing market, because I mentioned to you earlier I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, I said, I'll take on this housing thing pretty shortly, and I'll show you something. If you went out and bought a house for $50,000 at 6% interest, and then you made payments on that at the rate of $300 a month for 360 months, that's 30 years. The average loss, the minimum loss on that transaction is $90,000. $90,000 is the loss on that house. The break-even point is 5 years. And every year that you hold that house, after 5 years, you're losing money. You're losing money at the rate of whatever the monthly payments are. Now, I know that's kind of a shocker, and the average guy, you know, he looks at you like you're Mork from Ork when you tell him that. Now, most people have been educated in the public schools and are not trained in business at all. Now, I'm not opposed to home ownership, and I think you should own your own home, and I think you should own it free and clear. But most people disagree with that, and they like the concepts of leveraged buyouts. It's a leveraged buyout. And that's where you go and buy somebody out with somebody else's money and make payments, while the value of this house is constantly going up so that you can sell it. You never have your $161,000 invested in this house. Maybe you've got 10 or 20 in it. You buy it for $160, it goes up to $200, you sell it, and you make a $40,000 profit less your cost of goods sold. Now, most people, when they're talking in these numbers, I don't think that they've ever done the arithmetic on these practices. Now, I'm a businessman, and I can tell you right now, there's no profit in that deal. Now, people buy stocks. There's no profit in stocks. I don't know what you people are buying stocks and bonds for. Now, there was a time when there was profit to be made, but inflation runs at the rate of 4.7% per year on average from 1960 to 2000. You know, you could round that off to 5% because it's actually more than that, but that's the official government statistics, and they lie all the time. And they always put their best foot forward and give you the lowest possible number. I'm just using their numbers. And at the rate of 4.7% through that period of time, 40 years from 60 to 2000, there was no money to be made in stocks. Now, there might be an odd stock out there that did better than that 5% inflation rate, but boys and girls, you had to make 5% just to break even. You had to make 10% to make any money. Now, when in the business world, we look upon 5 or 10% as being chicken feed. I mark things up 100%. I'm looking for a keystone markup. And when I buy a house for $100,000, I want to sell it for $200,000, and I want to make a $100,000 profit, and I want to do that in 12 months. 12 months, 1 year. I'd rather do it in 1 week and do it 52 times in a year, but that isn't too practical. All right, now let's take a look here at the money changer, the coming crash in the housing market. Whenever I speak, Franklin says, I can make one statement guaranteed to bring looks of bewildered, clueless astonishment from the audience. Sell your homes because residential real estate is going to crash. Now, Franklin Sanders says that, and he said, my God, people look at him like he's a nut. Well, I've been teaching that for about 20 years. 20 years I've been teaching the same thing. Now, I'm not opposed to buying real estate and selling real estate and making a profit on it. Now, don't get me wrong here. What I'm opposed to is buying a house and making 360 payments on it. That's a dead loser. There's no money in that. Now, if you want to buy, sell, and trade, that's where the money's at, and I've been advocating that and telling you that for a long time. There's no money in employment. You can forget that. There's no money in self-employment or working for somebody else. Now, if you're out here doing that and you're just working your heart out, take a look at your balance sheet. Are you free and clear? Do you own your house free and clear? Do you own the farm? Do you own the business? Do you own the inventory? Do you own that free and clear? Because if you don't, you're vulnerable to an economic collapse. I say collapse, not an economic reversal, a recession. Now, you just saw that in 2000 when the stock market bubble broke in March of 2000. The people that were invested in the stock market lost $7.2 trillion. Just want to point that out. Now, I didn't lose anything in the stock market because I didn't have anything invested in it. And that's because I learned how to add and subtract. Now, I was 37 before I learned to add and subtract. I was a slow learner, a late bloomer. Now, once you learn how to add and subtract, multiply and divide and do percentages, you're going to be absolutely amazed at the nonsense that you've been engaged in most of or all of your life. So when Franklin Sanders says, I'm recommending you sell your house, I'm recommending the same thing. Now, this is a prophecy easy to deliver. Real estate bubbles never outlive the stock market bubbles that spawned them. And at the height of the Japanese stock market bubble that peaked in 1989, land in downtown Tokyo sold for $22,000 a square foot. But today it doesn't sell for anywhere near that. But it is a prophecy that's hard to believe, because the real estate bubble's bursting always lags the stock market collapse by 2 or 3 years, and sometimes a little longer. Now, in our present case, Alan Greenspan and his merry men at the Federal Reserve have pumped out zillions of dollars in new money, trying to let down the stock market bubble gently. It hasn't succeeded, and it never will, but he did manage to create bond market and real estate market bubbles. Now, the NASDAQ 100 sank from 4704 on March 27th, 2000, to 825 on October 9th, 2002. Now, that's a loss of 82.5%. Today, the market is up to 1446. Now, that's still a loss of 65.6% from its historic low, or from its historic high. And not over yet. The bond bubble burst in June of 2003 with bonds at 50-year highs and interest rates at 50-year lows. Tech stocks had trained investors to believe in instant riches. Could they resist the seduction of skyrocketing home prices, low interest rates, and a world awash with easy mortgage money? Now, over the last 3 years, most Americans have gone out and refinanced their homes. After all, interest rates dropped to historic lows. And people said, God, if interest rates are below 5%, you know, if I'm paying 8% interest on my mortgage and I can go refinance it and get my interest rate down to 5%, well, that might save me $100 or $200 a month on my mortgage. And while I'm at it, I can take $50,000 worth of equity out of my house and go spend it on a new SUV and college for the kids and maybe a swimming pool in the backyard. And they did. They did. We Americans have been out on a buying binge and a credit binge over the last 10 or 15 years that defies description. Well, home prices have never dropped since World War II. Well, that's what people believe, isn't it? And this is a prophecy that's hard to believe because the myths of real estate have such deep roots in our minds and our experience. So, you've probably heard people say home prices have never dropped since World War II. That's not true. Not true at all. Home prices cannot go down. You've probably heard that. That's not true either. Inflation has to drive home prices even higher. Also, not true. And everybody knows that you're better off owning a house than you are throwing your money down a rat hole renting. That's not necessarily true. It can be, but it's not necessarily so. And lastly, this is a prophecy that's hard to believe because it attacks our most cherished emotional experience. Sell my house, the place that I've passed countless happy moments with my spouse and family all of these years, the place where my children were born and grew up, the place where I've wept and laughed with my family and friends. Impossible. Some memories are worth more than money, you say. Besides, over half my net worth is tied up in that house. I have more invested there than anywhere else. Well, is your house an investment, or isn't it? All of these myths, these sentiments, these illusions prevent people from viewing their homes rationally as an investment. And they also blind our judgment to what is clearly a government-spawned bubble in real estate. All of the signs of a bubble top are present. Near 100% public and expert bullishness. It's a parabolic price curve, and it's an irrational expectation that it will last forever. And like any other investment that you ought to stand back and look at, your house should be looked at objectively and looked at against present market background and ask, is it time to hold or fold? Now, I keep returning to another piece of evidence, which, although merely anecdotal, weighs very heavily with me. You see, last October, in an interview with Equities Magazine, John Templeton said that every previous major bear market has been accompanied by a bear market in home prices. This time, home prices have gone up 20%, and this represents a very dangerous situation. When home prices do start down, they will fall remarkably far. In Japan, home prices are down to less than half what they were at the stock market peak back in 1989. Now, emphasize in your magazine how big the debt is here in America. The total debt in the United States is now $31 trillion. Now, that is three times the gross national product of the United States. That's unprecedented in a major nation. No nation has ever had such a debt as American has, and it's bigger than it was at the peak of the stock market boom in 2000. Now, think of the dangers involved. Almost everyone has a home mortgage, and some of those mortgages are 89% of the value of the home, and yes, some are even more. But the average is 89% of the value of your home. If home prices start down, there's going to be bankruptcies galore. And in bankruptcy, houses are sold at lower prices, pushing home prices down further. Now, after home prices go down to about a tenth of the highest price that homeowners paid, then it's time to buy. So wait until the prices drop 90%. Now, who is this guy, John Templeton? Why should one man's opinion carry so much weight? Well, it's simply because Templeton stands among the top three or four of the most successful investors in the 20th century. He runs the Templeton Fund, or he did. Sure, he could be wrong, but how much does he know that you and I don't know? And what is the chance of his being wrong against the chance of you or I being wrong? Do you get my drift? Well, Templeton didn't reach his judgment in a vacuum. In the bear markets that always follow bubbles, investments give up about 50 to 95% of their peak value. A 90% loss of peak housing value falls well within that range. Now, as an observer who watched silver fall from $50 an ounce to $3.50 an ounce over 12 years, that's a 93% loss, I can appreciate the self-avenging reality of these typical numbers. But lacking a string of impressive credentials, who am I and what is my opinion worth? So let's take a look at an expert. John R. Talbot began his career working as an engineer for the Bechtel Corporation, then got an MBA in finance from UCLA. For 9 years, he worked on Wall Street as an investment banker for Goldman Sachs, which we might call the belly of the beast. A founding member of Goldman's leveraged buyout group, it's called an LBO, he served on the firm's new product and strategic planning committees. Today, he's a full-time economic researcher and a visiting scholar to the Anderson School at UCLA. And as if that weren't enough, then Mr. Talbot has written a book, The Coming Crash in the Housing Market. 10 things you can do now to protect your most valuable investment. His themes are debt, leverage, risk, and the corruption that grows from government meddling in the marketplace. All right, let me pause right here and give you the specifics on that book. I don't sell it and I don't make any money off of it, but I think it's worth your time and effort. It's John R. Talbot is the author. McGraw-Hill in New York, 2003. The ISBN number is 0-07-142-220-X. 195 pages with the index. It's $14.95. You can probably pick it up at Barnes & Noble. Now, I want to also put a plug in here for the Money Changer put out by Franklin Sanders, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. You can call them on the telephone. It's 888-218-9226. I don't know what the subscription price is. I think it's about $150 a year. It's well worth it. Puts out a paper every month. It's a monthly newsletter. And there will be an article such as this one in here with the latest information on the bad news. What we would call him as one of the bad news bears. Now, those of us that are bears in the marketplace, we make money. You know, I don't think Franklin Sanders is over here losing his shirt buying stocks, you know, and buying, selling, and trading in the bond market. He's doing all right. And no, I'm not complaining. You know, I'm not complaining about Social Security going bankrupt. I'm not complaining about the income tax or Social Security. I'm not complaining about the Federal Reserve and the paper money and so on. I don't participate in it, so why should I complain about it? And I'm still able to put beans on the table, a little cornbread, and a glass of milk to wash it down. But most people are not in the same kinds of businesses that we are. You know, I'm self-sufficient. Franklin Sanders is self-sufficient. And most of you listening to me right now are not self-sufficient. You live in the city. You've got a house. You depend upon food, clothing, and shelter coming in from somebody else. Furthermore, if the Teamsters go on strike, or if there's a war, or if there's a depression, you lose your job, how are you going to make your house payments? And that's just where reality's at. So, guys like Templeton, Talbot, Sanders, Gordon, and, you know, McIlvaney, and a few others, we write newsletters, and we get on the air, and we tell our listeners and our subscribers, here's what's going on out there in the real world. Some people listen, take advantage, and some people don't. So you're not going to offend me if you don't sell your house next week and go invest it in something else. I don't care what you do. Nothing to me. But it's my position that somebody ought to tell you. And you're not getting told by CBS, NBC, ABC, or CNN. These clowns are telling you that the stock market is recovering, the economy is growing, everything is just honky-dory. Go out and buy yourself a new SUV. And I'm here to tell you that things aren't honky-dory, that our debt is swallowing us up, and there is an inevitable day of reckoning. And God Almighty tells us the same thing. You know, boys and girls, there's an inevitable day of reckoning. You got 23 laws here. You've been breaking these laws and giving God the finger now for the last 50 or 75 years. And there's an end to that. And I say it's time to get off that and get onto something that's more intelligent. So that's why I recommend the Money Changer. And this guy Talbot is being quoted here by the Money Changer this month. Hang on, I got to take a break here. We'll be right back with more on the coming crash in the housing market right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, if you have an income of $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 a year in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed and paying 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 a second time? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they turn around and make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax. Now, that means that you paid the 17% on that $7,650 twice. Twice. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just kind of special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call me here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, my tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about should you sell your house. Well, we're talking about the coming crash in the housing market. So should you sell your house while we're at the top of the market? And if you do, what are you going to do next? Where are you going to live? What are you going to do with the money? How are you going to use it? Now, is there a real estate bubble? Well, first, Talbot must show a housing crash is reasonably likely. Has housing reached irrational valuation in an atmosphere of unreasonable expectations? Now, I won't recount all of his proofs here or his self-defensive solutions because I want every single money changer reader to buy and read this book for themselves, then act on it. But more than any other investment, your real estate holdings endanger your financial future right now, precisely because a real estate crash is so inconceivable. Now, when the public and the experts agree with near unanimity that any investment is a sure thing, it's probably reached its peak and it's probably beyond its peak. But why protect yourself against a danger that you do not expect? Well, across the United States, the median price for existing homes and sales has risen eightfold. That's 800% over the last 35 years. Now, while new home prices have increased even faster, even after adjusting for inflation, home prices have almost doubled in real terms, up 70% over the same period. Now, since mortgage interest is deductible while rent is not deductible, that confers an additional benefit on home ownership. So be fair and adjust out the tax benefits of home ownership, and housing prices still remain historically high. Now, of course, that begs the next question. High relative to what? Well, to answer that, Talbot compares housing prices to the economy, the stock market, non-residential construction, and incomes. And here's the surprise. People today are spending a bigger portion of income than ever before on housing. 3.7 times the owner's income in 2002 versus 2.6 times in 1968. And now, Mama has been forced to go to work to help make the mortgage payment. Now, what should your house be worth? Now, here Talbot offers us a useful innovation. You create a theoretical price-earnings ratio for your house, and we judge whether a stock is a cheap price or whether it's a high price by dividing its earnings into the price of the stock. It's called the P/E ratio. And that tells us how much we have to pay for the income that the stock produces. A house price ought to be related to the income that it could produce. Evaluate the price of a house by dividing it by the rental income that it could earn. That gives you a P/E for your house. Now, does the debt on your house matter? Well, next Talbot takes a look at the debt, and especially the steep leverage common in mortgages. And it may surprise you to learn that household debt, especially mortgage debt, increased sharply over the past 20 years. Or that leverage in mortgages has increased as a relationship to the down payments, and they have shrunk from 20% to 10% to 5%, and now it is not uncommon to have zero down purchasing a new house. Or that bankruptcies and foreclosures are running at all-time highs, even though home prices, too, stand at all-time highs. Yes, but is a housing collapse or a price in housing collapse likely? Well, even with all of this data, Talbot still must meet the burden of proving that a crash is likely. For real estate bulls, his most devastating critique is proving that housing is not a truly free market and is neither free nor efficient nor rational. Now, of course, he could have proven his case with six little words: Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Jenny Mae. After all, the United States government created these government-sponsored entities. They're called GSEs, and they created these GSEs for a single purpose, and that was to inflate mortgage market liquidity. Therefore, by definition, they take the market in a direction in which buyers and sellers in a free market of and by themselves would not freely travel. However, Mr. Talbot is much more thorough and subtle than I am, so he looks at other mortgage market factors that prevent efficiency and distort price. These include the incestuous relation between appraisers and mortgage bankers and the moral hazard of the GSEs. Moral hazard is policy wonk speak for what happens when the government guarantees somebody's debt. When somebody else is paying, that is, the government, alias the taxpayers, well, surprise, surprise, people take greater risks with other people's money, and they keep on taking those risks until they blow themselves up in a bubble. Riskless success begets reckless excess. So, surprise, surprise. Government backing behind these GSEs has increased risk-taking and riskiness because the government promises to bail out their mistakes. And there's more good news. This same government scheme to enhance liquidity that has increased risk across the market has also concentrated lending in a very few institutions. And that means trouble in fewer and fewer institutions can bring down the entire industry. Now, examining the double-edged stroke of leverage for the individual, Mr. Talbot points out that if prices were to decline 25% across the board, the homeowner's 80% mortgage sinks underwater. Whoa, 20% down payments are a thing of the past in today's bustling mortgage market. Under the GSE's influence and greed to write more mortgages, down payments have sunk lower and lower. In some cases today, mortgages are available with a zero down payment, and the housing market has become riskier and riskier so that today's new home buyer, with his 5% or zero down payment, is virtually buying a call option on a home financed by other people's money. And we all know how careful we are with other people's money, now, don't we? Now let's take a look at some recent crashes and the GSEs. So next, Mr. Talbot examines five recent bubble crashes where he had personal experience. First was the 1987 stock market crash when prices dropped 20% in one day. Now the 1990 leveraged buyout crash, the 1990 commercial real estate crash, then the 1993-94 Japanese stock market and commercial real estate crash, and the 2000 technology stock crash. And out of these, he pulls the common threads that these crashes share with today's U.S. housing market. And Mr. Talbot also throws in a valuable examination of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, how interesting to hear this from a financial expert and veteran of the LBO era with its Byzantine finance. And I challenge anybody to read their annual reports and then tell me within $3 billion as to how much real cash flow either of them makes each year. You'll read that on page 134. Between them, the GSEs hold or guarantee about 90% of all conventional as opposed to subprime or riskier mortgages. Together, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac own or guarantee about half the nation's home mortgages. In a home mortgage market of $5.7 trillion, one government agency, Jenny Mae, and two quasi-agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the FMs for short, hold on their balance sheets or guarantee $3.7 trillion in residential mortgages. Close to the entire U.S. government debt of $7 trillion, which has taken 290 million people 225 years to assemble. That's on page 229. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are a leveraged Krakatoa waiting to explode. And counting all of their mortgage debt holdings and guarantees, Freddie Mac is leveraged, get this, leveraged 71 times its equity base of $17.6 billion. And Fannie Mae has leveraged 116 times its equity base of $15 billion. So I asked my friend James Turk about the leverage used by long-term capital management. You remember, long-term capital management was the hedge fund that nearly brought down the world's financial system back in 1998. Well, according to James, they normally operated on a leverage of 100 to 1 to 130 to 1. Now, that's the same range as these GSEs are operating today. Now, compare these GSEs' leverage to commercial banks. The 1988 Basel Accord allows international banks a maximum leverage of 12 to 1 on loan portfolios and 24 to 1 on residential mortgage portfolios. Now, if they were bank regulators, they would have long ago slammed the door on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But no, there's that implied government guarantee that supports this house of cards. Fannie and Freddie launched into outer space of bubbledom years ago, and only the insane government implied guarantee keeps their ship in space. Now, what straw is finally going to break this camel's back? Well, pointing out that all of the bubble ingredients are present is not the same thing as foretelling when the bubble is going to pop. Timing the burst is always the most difficult and the trickiest propositions with bubbles. They are the child of confidence. They are a human and a mysterious phenomenon, as mysterious as love. Who can say what makes confidence bloom or confidence wither? So in Chapter 8, Mr. Talbot presents some of these camel back-breaking straws. Rising interest rates might do the job, or even falling rates, if a severe deflation occurred, an outcome as unlikely as my becoming fluent in Swahili overnight. And another trigger might come from the federal government's desperate search for new tax sources, eliminating the deduction for mortgage interest or banking losses that force banks to reduce mortgage lending, or a recession with high unemployment and high foreclosures might do the trick also. Then there's the unexpected scandal. In my mind, a more likely candidate is some scandal or unexpected failure of a big name in the industry. Now, that might appear as unexpected trouble for a big home builder. Large corporate builders like KB Pulte Homes or Centrex build nearly one in four new homes nationwide today. What if one of those construction companies failed suddenly? During the week of 10/4/04, shares of Pulte PHM tanked after announced price cuts in the Las Vegas market on the back of weak demand. Or it might be rising unsold housing inventories in hot markets like San Diego, San Francisco, or the Northeast, New York and Boston. Or perhaps a succession of terrifying hurricanes leaving Florida a lot less attractive and sending retirees scurrying north to the Georgia and North Carolina hills. Folks on walkers and oxygen bottles don't like their power cut off for 5 or 6 days at a time. Now, based upon what we've seen so far, Fannie and Freddie begin to stink. But the more likely candidate for scandal are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac themselves. In the spring of 2003, improper accounting practices, that is, hiding $5 billion in profits, and then incorrectly reporting derivatives, of which Freddie owns a boatload of those, resulted in a management shakeup at Freddie Mac. CEO heads rolled and the SEC fined Freddie Mac $125 million. Now, that story hasn't ended yet. On September the 27th, 2004, Fannie Mae announced an agreement with the Office of Federal Housing Enterprise. That's the toothless and catchy named OFHEO regulatory agency that Congress set up over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that Fannie Mae would raise capital reserves to about 30% or 30% above its required minimum $31 billion by mid-2005. So they're going to raise an extra $10 billion and put it in the bank. Fannie also agreed to use more conservative accounting standards in accounting for derivative losses. That was reported in USA Today on September 28, 2004. On September the 29th, the Wall Street Journal reported that federal prosecutors have opened a criminal investigation into possible accounting fraud at Fannie Mae. And in 1998, Fannie juggled accounting to boost earnings by $200 million. And did I forget to mention that bloated the bonuses for the top management and staff? That was reported in USA Today, 10/1/04. Quick, now here's a riddle. What begins with F rhymes with the pay in payoff and is a synonym for corruption. Well, all this news took down Fannie Mae's stock 13% to a 52-week low. And on October the 18th, it closed at $68.80, down from a 52-week high of $80.82. Freddie Mac closed near $65. Speaking of Fannie and Freddie, here's a great hedge against a real estate collapse. Buy long-term put options on these corrupt mortgage behemoths, and a collapse in real estate will inevitably bring them down. However, be willing to show patience once you take your position. How bad could a real estate crash get? Well, Talbot glances briefly at that. The short summary is very bad, so he also presents 10 tactics to protect yourself. Obviously, the strategic goal must be to reduce your exposure to residential real estate. Top on that notion, on top on that action list, would be sell your house. At this point, most of you will throw down the money changer in disgust, spitting, he's finally gone completely nuts. Well, okay, maybe I have. Maybe it's the same kind of crazy that I was in late 1999 and early 2000 when I was warning you that stocks were about to crash and silver and gold about to launch a new bull market. But do me one favor, read Talbot's book, and then you judge the case that he makes for yourself for a housing crash. You may spend $15 and save yourself a couple hundred thousand. Well, let's analyze what we've just covered here, and let's start thinking about some practical solutions. I said that I'd show you the $90,000 loss on a $50,000 house. I've got about 6 or 8 minutes here, and I want to spend a little time on that. So next time, I'm going to show you how to buy a house over 30 years at $50,000 with a 6% mortgage and lose $90,000 on the transaction. You know, these fairy tales that we've heard all of our lives about housing are just that, just fairy tales. Now, there's money to be made in real estate. Don't get me wrong, I'm not down on real estate. I was in the real estate business. I was in the contracting business. I built houses. I remodeled houses. I'm familiar with the profits and profit margins, but I was buying and selling real estate before I was 37, before I could count. And one day I woke up and said, "My God, where are all my profits?" And then a guy taught me how to count. I've never been the same since. And tomorrow night I'm going to teach you how to count. Now, I was talking to one of my students not too long ago. He happens to have a house out in Truckee, California, and I think that's about a $30,000 house. Back in 1960, that would have been $30,000 or less. And then today, he told me that house was worth $300,000. I could hardly believe it. $300,000. Wow. Now, remember that when the housing market finally collapses, which it's, they've done it before and they'll do it again, and all these markets collapse. I don't care whether it's the gold market, silver market, housing market, stock market, bond market. They're all priced in irredeemable fiat paper money. And any time that you deal in unjust weights and balances, ultimately it collapses. And when you read about this, unless it directly affects you, unless you had stocks and you lost your shirt in the 2000 meltdown, you probably aren't paying attention. Or even if you did lose money, you're probably sitting there saying, "Well, that was in stocks, but that's not housing." Well, it's happened before and it'll happen again. Just like tulips, you know. There are all these bubbles that are created over time, and the trick here is to sell at the top. Now, housing is at the top. Now, James Turk thought that we might have another 2 or 3 years left, but you don't know that. You don't know if you got 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 years or 2 or 3 months. Now, if you're mortgaged out and you're leveraged out here and you've got some equity in your house, the worst position that you can be in is to have a $200,000 house with $100,000 equity. Because the minute you miss your payments, you lose your $100,000 equity. So let's be intelligent. Let's suppose that you don't own your house free and clear. And you've got zero equity in your house. And you can't rent something any cheaper than what you're paying right now. Well, stay right where you're at. Can't go wrong there. But if you've got a house that's free and clear, you can't get hurt there because nobody's going to foreclose on your house as long as you can make the taxes. Now, if you're living in some high tax district, you know, and you don't have income and you can't make those $12,000 a year taxes, you know, that could pose a problem, couldn't it? And I told you what happened in Virginia in 1865. They doubled the taxes. You know, the Union Army won the war, so they doubled the taxes. And then they doubled the taxes in 66 and doubled them again in 67 and drove all of the owners off their property. And then they lowered the taxes back to what they were in 1865. What you're seeing here, then, is just a giant shift in ownership, change in ownership. Now, if you can't maintain your position, then I recommend that you have at least a four-year supply of cash on hand in the form of gold to pay your taxes. Double next year, double the year after that, and double the year after that. So if your taxes are $1,000 a year, you need $1,000, $2,000, $4,000, and $8,000. That's $15,000 in gold buried in a hole in the ground. They'll only do that for 3 or 4 years, and then they'll reduce it back. See, the guys that are doing this, that are engineering this program, they don't want to pay those high taxes. They'll raise the taxes to drive you out. And then they buy your house for 10 cents on the dollar. Then they'll lower the taxes back to what they ought to be. Same thing is true with prices. If you've got a $30,000 house that's worth $300,000 today, you sell it. And you take the money and you stick it into gold and you bury it in a hole in the ground. 10 holes in the ground. So that in case somebody finds one of your stashes, you don't lose it all. Then you wait until that market collapse occurs. Now back in 1980, I watched silver go up to $50 an ounce. And I said, that's a bubble. Now's not the time to buy. So when the collapse occurred, it went down to 15 and it stayed there for quite a long time. I said, well, that's about the bottom, because gold went down to about $500 from its high of 8. So you take that $15 an ounce. Now at 50 to 8, you know, that was around 16 to 1. And that's the correct price. Remember, gold and silver, when it dropped to 15, take 500, divide that by 15, and it went back up to 33, and I said, well, that's probably about the bottom. I didn't have any idea it was going to go down to 350, or I would have waited. But it's no big deal, because I bought the silver with the cash that I had on hand as it was going from 15 down to 350. So I've been a net buyer while it's been going down. That's where you want to be. But you want to sell it when it's at 50. And the same thing is true with your house. If you got a house that's worth $300,000, you sell it, convert it into something that's hard, gold and silver in a bull market, you convert it to hard, and then you wait until real estate collapses, and then you come back into the marketplace with your $300,000, and you buy 10 of those $30,000 houses, or 5, or 2. But it doubles your money, doesn't it? Or triples or quadruples it. All right, now there's the story on the housing, or one half of the story on housing. Now, we're just about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right here. And we'll be back tomorrow night, and I'll show you what happens when you buy a house for $50,000. Hold on to the house for 30 years and lose $90,000 in the process. People have been doing that as long as I've been around, and they think it's good business. I'll give you the numbers next time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. I'm out of time. I'll see you back here next time, tomorrow night. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.